There's a saying that someone has to speak what's on their mind. What's on my mind now is just to, at least myself, to respond to the last of the correspondences on this topic that you may have seen on the comments section, which followed on from the Miss USA hopeful, who was asked about her opinion about same-sex marriage, and she said that she didn't believe in it and wasn't raised to consider that such things were acceptable. And for that, she lost her candidacy, or at least lost the opportunity to win. I just applauded her taking that stand, and then a controversy arose in which myself and three devotees are writing back and forth, something that I can't keep doing, I won't do. That's why I'm just trying to at least conclude my position on this verbally as opposed to doing it written. And that controversy was that this issue about same-sex marriage, homosexuality, active homosexuality practices, is not such a real big thing. We shouldn't really allow it to get in the way of Krishna consciousness or people's practicing Krishna consciousness, and that rather it should be something that's embraced or approved in Krishna consciousness, accepting that this is the way people are, and that through the practice of Krishna consciousness they'll be purified. Now, there's some aspects of that argument which are fine. For instance, the aspect that anyone should be able to, whatever their sexual orientation, should be able to practice Krishna consciousness. Everyone should be able to chant Hare Krishna. We're not going to discourage them because of their sexuality or lack of sexuality or orientation or whatever other rules and regulations they do or don't follow. We're not going to discourage them to chant Hare Krishna. We want everyone to chant Hare Krishna. And if we see that people are addicted to a certain lifestyle, albeit sinful, we're not going to just hammer away on them on that. So far we're in agreement. Where we're not in agreement is that we're not going to accept, just because someone practices Krishna consciousness, that their lifestyle, which may be sinful, is acceptable within the greater framework of pure devotional service. We're not going to cease from telling people that, no, this is wrong, this conduct is wrong. You may not be able to give it up at the present time, but your plan should be to do so at some time. And I think I made that point clear in my writings on this issue. What's really amazing to me in the repeated responses that I get is a real misconception that conduct, in this case, active sexual behavior, or put it simply, sinful life, does not impact on the practices of devotional service. With the saying by the last commentator that we're in agreement about Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan, but we're disagreeing on social issues. Here it's made to sound like these social issues, which are basic rules of conduct, integral rules of conduct to Krishna consciousness, for instance, the rule of no illicit sex life outside of marriage, and for any other reason other than procreation, because sex life in homosexuality doesn't result in procreation, it's illicit from beginning to end, and therefore it's not conducive to Krishna consciousness. But somehow or another, this is relegated to being some kind of social issue that doesn't impact on Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. But of course it does. Sambandha is how do you establish your relationship, and Abhideya is the practical aspect of establishing it. If you incorporate sinful life into the establishment of a relationship with Krishna, and if you're practicing Krishna consciousness with the mentality that that's all right, there's no question of having Prayojana. So all of a sudden, Krishna consciousness appears to be presented like some kind of armchair philosophy that has nothing really to do with how you're living, as if, for instance, Varnashram has nothing to do with how you become Krishna conscious. Although, of course, Srila Prabhupada very much emphasized Varnashram Dharma in the last 4 years that he was with us, explaining that for conditioned souls such as us, it was imperative that devotees practice a form of Varnashram. Not the Vedic form, no doubt, but the essence of Varnashram, Samsiri Haritoshanam, living, working, and conducting your different orders, stages of life in a way that is always pleasing towards Krishna. That means that you anukulyana samkalpa pratikulya vivarjanam, that you reject what's unfavorable and you accept what's unfavorable. This seems to be like some kind of mystique that Varnashram has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, but it very much does. And for me, this is sort of like an anatomy of how deviations take place. I don't want to pass any judgments on the individuals here, but their opinions and the opinions that they are voicing here are not solely theirs. There is a broader circle of Vaishnavas, practicing devotees, some of seniority, well-known within the society, who also give similar opinions, particularly in relationship to the issue of homosexuality, is something that the Krishna consciousness movement should be more open to and embrace. In other words, qualify Srila Prabhupada's statements on homosexuality and make it an acceptable form of lifestyle within the practice of Krishna consciousness. So, of course, these type of ideas come from too much dependence on modern sociological views, on the opinions of psychiatrists and psychologists, what to speak of the actions of politicians who are pushing same-sex marriage, who are accepting it on par with opposite-sex marriage, allowing same-sex partners to adopt children. It's not everywhere, but it's somewhere, and the tendency is increasing more and more because, after all, it is Kali Yuga. And that Kali Yuga is affecting Krishna consciousness movement, obviously, as it's also the world around us. Therefore, the emphasis that I'm trying to make is that our devotees need to be very clear about not only what our Siddhanta is. You're not this body, you're spirit, soul, Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, chant Hare Krishna, and so on. But what is actually the conduct that is important and acceptable for those who want to progressively advance and get the benefit of chanting Hare Krishna, come to the stage of realizing you're not this body, develop their eternal relationship with the Lord and realize. And when we're not very vigilant, and this type of compromise comes in which then people come to the conclusion, as you'll see in the comments that were written there, that we should just accept that on this point Srila Prabhupada was wrong. Now, no follower of Srila Prabhupada is going to accept that Srila Prabhupada was wrong, especially on an issue that he repeated himself many times, was continually consistent in his opinion on that issue, and didn't say anything to the opposite, wrote about it, spoke about it, and included it both in his Bhaktivedanta purports, then why should we say that it's wrong? And unfortunately, this is not the only issue in which people would like to propose that Srila Prabhupada was wrong. Some people propose that there shouldn't be four regulative principles, there should be three, because Prabhupada was wrong to consider that people in Kali Yuga could have the potency to be able to follow that regulative principle of no illicit sex outside of marriage for any other purpose other than procreation. And there are other things in which people think that Srila Prabhupada was wrong. He was wrong to include his opinions in his purports about the differences between men and women, and the list will grow as time goes on. And then obviously, if someone is willing to accept that Srila Prabhupada was wrong, if he becomes so much under the influence of outside sources, then it doesn't take long before one loses sight of one's actually what is sinful and what is not, and that we then succumb to, for instance, the same type of philosophy that the Christians have. Yes, there's no harm in killing animals. Thou shalt not kill means thou shalt not murder. There's no harm in having slaughterhouses and killing millions of animals, because ultimately they have no soul. They just sort of had a spirit. It wasn't the original teachings of Christianity, but it's what is widespread now. In fact, it's the only teaching that you hear, or that you may hear even from Sahaja Vaishnavas, who will say that actually the essence of Krishna consciousness, the essence of Vaishnavism, is to chant Hare Krishna, to have faith in Krishna and practice devotional service. If you do those things, then actually there's no sin that a devotee cannot perform except for committing Vaishnava aparad. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, these things are not really sins. Vaishnavas are already practicing Krishna consciousness. The only thing that's really sinful is if you commit an offense to another Vaishnav. That should be avoided. So how did they come up with that? Obviously, they also qualified the teachings of their acharyas, because this aren't not the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not the teachings of Ramanujacharya, Madhavacharya, not teachings of Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan or Nimbarkacharya or Vishnu Swami or the Kumaras or Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva or anyone. But still, it's going on. So we should be vigilant. We should know what the principles of Krishna consciousness are, what the Siddhanta, what actually our Vaishnava culture is about, what conduct it is that we're meant to follow, and be very reluctant to accept anyone and anything who immediately wants to change something that Srila Prabhupada instituted, or to do something different than what was done during Srila Prabhupada's time. Anyway, I've said what's on my mind. I have to go on to doing puja now. Hare Krishna.